Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 119, featuring a very dear friend of mine, Dave Carlson. Dave and I have been friends for a long time, as you will quickly gather from the podcast. I lovingly refer to him as the Nick Offerman of visual effects. He kind of looks like him and he kind of sounds like him, and we talk about that a little bit. Dave came to us because he was hanging out. Unfortunately, he was between jobs. He's now fully employed by some great people and actually doing really well. But he came to us when he kind of was having a bad time because he had actually gotten laid off from his previous job. No fault of his own, of course. They just sort of closed down part of his department, and he just happened to be one of the casualties in the affair. But he's got an amazing career, and you can hear a lot about his history and how he sort of became a creative person on the fly and sort of did what he did. And we talk a little bit about visual effects in Massachusetts, which is something that a lot of people don't really know about, and a little bit of its history back there. So a really great conversation with Dave. I love the guy. He's a really, really cool guy. And get into some of the things he's doing now. He's obviously started to focus a lot more on the VR world, which is very, very common for highly talented visual effects people in Los Angeles to sort of move into VR, and talk a little bit about what the skill set that he had to undertake to do that, which is really interesting. So anyway, a few announcements. Let's see what's going on. There is, if you are listening to it the week, listening to this podcast the week that it comes out, you should be, and you happen to be going to AIA, you should go to our booth over at AIA. We've been presenting some really cool stuff there. Melissa will be there. Corey will be there. A bunch of other people will be there. So definitely go check us out over at AIA. And let's see what else is going on. I will be at FMX very shortly after that. So if you're going to FMX, go check it out. Go see all the things we're doing. Have a booth there. We'll have some presentations there. Go to chaosgroup.com/FMX2017, and you should be able to see all the list of events that's going on that we're doing. So that would be good for you guys to do. And I'll be doing some talks as well. So go check out some of the talks that I'll be doing. Just go to the FMX site itself and look at the schedule, and you'll see that I'll be hosting some sites in the VR world, as well as doing a talk for V-Ray Days, where we will be doing a live podcast for those of you who want to join in. We're not going to actually broadcast it live. We're just going to record it live in front of everyone, and hopefully we can get some great audience participation. So if you are at FMX and you want to go to the podcast and participate in the podcast, it'd be great to see you guys there. Can't think of any other big announcements we have. We've gotten so many now that I'm kind of losing track, but it's been a lot of really interesting things going on. So of course you can always follow us at labs.chaosgroup.com if you want to check things out there. Oh, one quick story. I did have a quick story. Someone did notify us recently that there was an issue with the Gear VR, and that if you had been rendering stereo cube maps, which a lot of people have been, and been using stereo cube maps and putting them in presentations, if you recently updated your Gear VR software, and I'm not sure which part of the software caused the problem, all of the stereo cube maps seems to have swapped the eyes. Left and right eye have been swapped, and the entire image seems to be mirrored. And this is actually a problem with the Gear VR and their viewer, their native image viewer, which is a big deal. So they are going to fix it. And the reason I know they're going to fix it, because I tried to figure out a way to get in touch with them. So I went on Twitter and contacted John Carmack on Twitter. And guess what? He responded. He's actually really cool. So John Carmack responded, said he looked into it, and they're going to figure out a way to fix this. So hopefully we'll get a fix soon. Just letting you guys know. All right, guys, hopefully you will enjoy this great podcast with my good friend, Dave Carlson, the Nick Offerman of visual effects.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. I've been better.
just got laid off a couple weeks ago. That's awesome. But yeah, I'm good.
Listen, we're not always going to do podcasts when someone is at their peak.
That's why I'm here, because I'm not at my peak anymore.
No, you're still a very talented person. That's nothing to do with it. I know what you mean.
No, I lose all talent after I get laid off.
Yeah, no. That's cool. Yeah, I understand that. And I will consider myself fortunate because it means you have enough time to come by and do lunch and record a podcast.
Yes, and thank you for the lunch. It was
you're welcome.
Delish.
You're welcome. It's all good. Another secret reason I want to be on your podcast is because of the whole Nick Offerman thing.
Oh man. I still use that as my avatar.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. caricaturized version.
You've changed your beard a little bit because you used to be a little bit more Nick Offerman beard.
Yeah.
And now you don't do it as much.
I was going to take a sip. I think I will just wait until you stop making me grin here. Yeah. Oh, man.
That was really funny. I remember I was watching, what was the Conan O'Brien thing he did?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh, yeah.
Where it was Nick Offerman reads tweet from young female celebrities.
Miley Cyrus tweets, can't stop eating walnuts.
That's exactly what it sounded like. And what I thought was hilarious is like, this is totally Dave. I was like, look at this. This is so Dave. And then I showed it to you and you were like, what the hell? And then you said in the morning you woke up and you're like brushing your teeth or something and you just look at yourself in the mirror and says, can't stop eating walnuts.
That's right. And I couldn't believe it too. I was looking in there. I was like, well, I just woke up. I'm baggy eyed and everything. It's like, right. I'm at my worst. And it does look like Nick Offerman.
Who is an ultimately awesome guy. So it's a good compliment, my friend.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. But you and I have known each other through many different projects and we've done a lot of things together.
Yeah.
Because think the first time, you were at the at DD commercials when I was in features, but I don't think we ran into each other.
We worked together for the first time at Method.
At Method.
Yep. When I was at Riot and Method and Riot became one under the Method name. And and then me, you, and Daniel, Daniel Buck, by the way.
Yeah.
we had sat in a triangle configuration.
Uh-huh.
And then years.
What were we working on? What was the project?
It was Scion.
Oh, you were on the Scion project.
Yeah. Yeah, which was a lot of fun. It was great.
Yeah.
And actually learned a lot from you guys in pun unintended, but your methods.
Right.
And it was great. It was a great experience.
That's right, because you hadn't really been using V-Ray until recently, right?
Well, I used it years before that on a project with Eric Barba and those guys at DD on the Nine Inch Nails commercial. Music video.
Yeah. We've talked about that music video. It's kind of like a pinnacle history moment. Yeah.
That was like, it changed our lives. It was great.
So how did you, were you just like, you're going to be a lighter on the show or something like that?
Yeah, I was usually just lean towards generalist, and, so I mean the laptop you see in that video, that's, I built and looked at it.
Okay.
But unfortunately I had an offer at some point before the project ended and I just had to take it.
I
had to. It was a staff position, and that's like, the holy grail for VFX people. So
yeah, especially in commercials, you tend to bounce around from project to project. It's hard to get staff positions.
It is. And I had to bail ship, and I started at Riot, and the very first project I was on, it was a Chase Bank commercial. And guess what I had to build? Same exact laptop. It was unbelievable.
You had to build it again?
You know, I just built this. And everybody's like, did you grab it? No.
Right. It's hilarious. Mm. That's funny. So you were at Riot for a while, I guess.
I was there for 4.5 years before it became Method. And then it was a further 9 months.
Right.
So I was basically, I was basically in the same room or series of rooms for almost 5.5 years.
Right.
So, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Interesting. Okay, so let's
people love backstories. What got you into visual effects? What got you into computers?
Oh, man.
Were you one of those Amiga guys?
Yep.
I could tell.
Yeah. I was
an Amiga Lightwave guy, right?
Yeah. Well, before the Amiga was out, too, I was just always into computers, you know, just tinkering. I loved the fact that you can give it instructions and it, you know, as long as it was the right instructions, obviously it worked. But yeah, it was a lot of fun just being able to make my own games, you know? And then when the Amiga came out, it was just like, are you kidding me? I have all these colors.
Right.
It was just like, now I'm thinking back of the Tim and Eric's universe.
Oh my God.
When he's like, we used to have 9 planets and now we have 90 planets.
That's a lot of planets.
So yeah, we had like our
Which is probably actually true now.
Right? Yeah. It's like the moon. It could be a planet, you know?
Well, they're talking about all these exoplanets now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The what was that one? The Trickster or Tristar or whatever with the 7 Earth-like planets.
Oh, that's a different star, though.
Yeah. But that was like 39 light years away right now.
That's not that far.
Nope.
Well, nope. It's an expensive Uber.
As the crow flies, yeah.
Maybe a little bit on the high side for Uber, but you can get there.
Yeah. Well, you know, without the multiplier, maybe it would work out.
Yeah. Depends. Don't go on New Year's Eve. Exactly.
Oh man!
So you were doing. You had a lot more colors on your Amiga.
Yeah, it was from 16 to 4096.
Yeah, right.
Wow,
and that was 16-bit color.
It was actually no. It was the hold and modify. They called it ham mode.
Okay.
And I'm sending goosebumps to all those Amiga fans out there.
Right.
But it was like hold and modify, and you were able to like. Fake more colors on the screen. It was pretty damn cool.
Huh.
Yeah. So it just kept going from there. And I was like, every step of the way, I kind of just stayed with it, you know, until, on and off throughout that time, I was also doing illustrations and airbrushing and, you know, painting, everything, you know, whatever I could do. I was
Where?
Doing at In my room, my house.
This was back in Boston?
But yeah, this is as I was growing up, like all my life, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I would take side projects all the time, you know. Like, you know, if somebody needed their hockey helmet painted or their motorcycle tank painted or whatever, you know, or their car tire, you know, the spare tire on the back of a Jeep.
I want to put a little
tire cover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they wanted Tasmanian Devil or whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Things like that, yeah. So, you know, I remember my first one, it was actually literally that Tasmanian Devil on my uncle's tire cover. And my mom said to me, well, you're on your way. That's where it starts.
Right.
Yeah, that was my first paid art gig.
Wow.
Yeah.
How much she paid you, do you remember?
Oh, it was like
$300. Oh, nice.
Like yeah.
It's pretty good.
He's a good uncle.
Yeah, he's a good uncle, indeed.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really good.
So this is when you were still in high school, I guess, at this point?
No, junior high.
Junior high. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, junior high. It was like just before high school.
That's great.
So, yeah.
And so did you have an airbrush thing? And
yeah, where compressor.
Where did you get all that? Acquired it?
Well, my mom, she helped me out whenever I was interested in something. So I was like, you know what? I'd love to do this. And she was, you know, helpful.
Nice.
Yeah. It was very
good to have an encouraging parent like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. 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 all right. So then you started playing on the computer as well.
Mm-hmm. At home. Yeah. All that.
And what were you doing?
Oh, I was just nerding out constantly. Just whatever information I could find on graphics and how to manipulate them and how do I can send input and get output.
Right.
You know, I was just trying to ingest as much as I could and applying it. I would go up in my room, I'd write out everything on paper, pencil and paper.
Right.
And debug it in my head, you know, I'd have pages of code.
Right.
And then I run downstairs as soon as I thought this will work. And sometimes it actually would work the first fucking time. It was amazing. I'm still amazed by it. But
longhand write down code.
Yes.
And then type it out. Why would you just start typing on the computer?
Oh, it was such, well, this is, I mean, budgets were limited then. Okay. So we didn't have a printer for it.
Oh, okay.
But not only that, it was just, it was a very prim, I mean, it was a Tandy TRS-80, MC-10 actually, was the smaller version of the Coco.
Uh-huh.
And, but it still was the same brain, you know?
Right.
And I remember getting, for Christmas, I got a 16K expansion pack. It brought it up to 20K. I was like, how am I going to use all this RAM? I did.
Yeah. My first computer was a Sinclair ZX88.
Oh, yeah. Timex Sinclair.
It had, I don't remember if it had 4K or whatever. It's like ridiculously small.
The Timex Sinclair 1000 was...
1000 was beyond the 88. It was after that.
It was.
Yeah.
Because that, I thought, was 1K.
Oh, maybe it was that one.
Yeah. Yeah. It was black. It was like this.
Yeah.
Like a really tiny. Yeah.
Yeah. It's teeny. Had a weird keyboard and you'd like press.
Yeah. My cousin had one.
But I think
one.
It cost like $100 or something like that.
It was, yeah. It was like our, you know, the precursor to the Raspberry Pi or something, you know.
Yeah. It was pretty cheap.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to like, all right, you want to start learning some basics, see if that interests you.
Yeah.
That's the perfect one. I did a lot on that. Crappy
it's
thing.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I actually worked on those too because my cousin had one. She'd bring it over and we'd like nerd out on, you know. And then, of course, my buddy across the street growing up with him, you know, my best friend, still my best friend.
Right.
He had the better computers. He had the Atari 800 XL eventually. And it was like, are you kidding me? So I was always over there and we were just nerding out over there constantly. Mm-hmm. And then we ended up getting Commodore 64 when it was like, maybe, you know, almost on par. The 800 XL was still a little bit better, I think.
My buddy had a Commodore 64, and I had the Sinclair ZX80.
Such a drastic difference.
That's so massive. So he was like, hey, I got the flight simulator. And I'm like, oh, it's so cool. And I was like, I don't have flight simulator. Mm. So I decided I was going to try to write my own flight simulator for the ZX88.
It's text-based.
Yes, it was text-based. Well, it was instrument-based.
Yeah, okay.
So basically it was like the physics didn't work. I don't know how to write physics.
Yeah, right.
But basically the idea was, it was like you're looking at the instrument panel and you're going to try to land the plane. That was the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I had. And I was like furiously trying to make something work.
Well, you know, did it work?
I guess.
Well, all right. Well, my guess is good enough.
Sure.
It's actually the journey. It's not the
arrival. Yeah.
And that's what I love about it all. To this day, I still
journey. That shit.
Yeah, still the journey getting there. It's not getting there itself.
Right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you were hanging out in the Amigas, and you had your buddy who had the better computer, and you were jealous about that. It's been down there.
Yeah, but it was just like, well, he's across the street.
Right.
You know, it's easy access. So I was like, all right, I'll settle for that.
Sure.
So it's good. You know, he always had the better toys.
Always? Yeah. Did he have a pool too and everyone else, no one else did?
Actually, no. Nobody had a pool around there.
Oh, yeah. It was just too cold.
Yeah. It was like, yeah. Or it was just too many leaves get in it, you know? You know?
Yeah.
Oh, man. What's that? A dead squirrel? Okay.
Yeah.
We're done here. No more pool.
Yeah. I've had dead squirrels in pools in New York. It's gross.
Yeah.
All right. So where did you go from there?
Well, let's see. And throughout high school, I was, you know what? I was doing more illustration during high school.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually drawing a lot more. And as a matter of fact, I had my own fans, as it were.
Okay.
So as you walk down the hall between classes, people are, you know, shuffling with their lockers and everything like that. They're, you know, milling around, and you pass by people's lockers when they're open and you see like, wait, I drew that.
Right.
How did that get over here? And you stop me like, how'd you get that? Oh, I got it from so-and-so. Oh, okay. Wow. Huh.
Right.
Interesting.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
So people would find your stuff?
Yeah.
Where would they find it?
Or they would ask somebody if they can have it, or, you know, it would just make its way.
Okay.
But I would get requests, you know, because of that. Or somebody would say, hey, can you draw that again? I'm like, oh, okay. I see what happened.
Right.
He gave it away and then Right, can you draw that again for me? But yeah, it was interesting. You know, people would come to me with a picture of their dad's old, like, 40s era Ford pickup, and they want me to render it, you know?
Right.
And of course, back then, rendering had a different meaning.
Yeah.
But
what were you using? Just pencil?
It depended what kind of look they wanted. Sometimes it would be watercolor, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Watercolor. Sometimes it was just marker, you know, or sometimes they just wanted a pencil shaded rendering. Color pencil sometimes. But usually it was like, you know, pencil shaded or even pen and ink if they wanted a cartoon style type of thing, you know.
Okay.
But yeah, no, those were fun times. That just kind of led to, you know, more computer dev, you know.
Right.
And then, you know, I've always been a fan of Star Wars, of course. I know everybody mentions that, but it's like, you know, that and Battlestar and Logan's Run, things like that, you know.
Right.
And so you just see that stuff. You're like, how do they do that? And then, you know, some people keep that question going. I didn't keep it going until later, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah. I just, you know, it's like, oh, computers, this is fun.
Right.
You know, oh, I like writing this and I like doing that and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I like playing video games. So, but then it comes back to this. And then, you know, Jurassic Park and, you know, things like that. You're like, whoa. What's with these dinosaurs not looking all step motion-y, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, all right.
Now, hold on. You just, we'll get back to the second. Mm-hmm. Let me just start to add up. You're one of those 71 people too, right? You were born in 71.
I was born in 70.
In 70?
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
Yeah
close.
Yep.
Because there's a lot of us that were like in 71, 70. And there must have been something that got all of us.
Oh.
Like the timing was right? Yeah. All the computers were just starting to become big enough that you could start doing things.
Goosebumps.
People were starting to take them home to do weird programming on. More colors were starting to come available on computers.
Yeah, we rode that wave. I think it was a crest that arose at the right time in our lives.
And I think, you know, then the Star Wars and the Jurassic Park, and we were just ready. We were right there.
Yep.
So I think there's a lot of people in the industry that were born 70, 71, 72.
Yeah.
And, you know, several of them have been on the podcast, and it's like, yeah, around the same time.
Yeah, and you probably hear similar stories all across the board.
Oh, yeah, across the board.
Yeah. It's crazy, but that's the thing. It is I liken it to a wave that you ride, you know, it's just a technology wave. And if you're there at the right moment, and you know how to manipulate the wave somehow, you know, or you're going to do okay.
So you're going back to Jurassic Park and you're seeing the dinosaurs moving and you realize, oh shit, I can do this on a computer.
Yep. And I had already been doing art on a computer. I was doing, 2D cell animation the time Jurassic Park was out.
Mm-hmm.
And I had access to Lightwave.
Right.
Yeah.
On the Amiga.
Yep. And Babylon 5 was, you know, done on the Amiga. Sure.
Put that a little closer. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, back then, Babylon 5, that was the, one of the first big, if not the first, big, you know, fairly big production being done on an Amiga video toaster using Lightwave for the CG. And granted, you look back at it and it's like, wow, that's pretty primitive by today's standards, but it's still like, it was important. It was a TV show. And to do all those effects and render it all out and, you know, on the budget for TV, that was just amazing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that brought it even closer to me because I was like, oh, I have an Amiga. I know how to do a lot of things on the Amiga. Yeah. How do I get that, you know?
This is the same Eric Barba story, too.
Well,
Eric Barba is actually – did you know that Eric Barba was actually a salesman for Silicon Graphic Machines?
No.
Yes.
he never told me that.
Yeah. Well, I used to listen to his podcast. It's crazy. But he was doing some you know, really kind of cool stuff, Eric was. And that was – he was over at doing Sequest or something.
Yep.
Like. Yeah.
Yep.
And that was on an Amiga.
That's right.
Lightwave.
Yeah. With another old boss of mine too, Tim McHugh.
Who started
Area 51.
Okay.
Yep.
So. And
Greg Teagarden was there too, I think. I think that's where you already started.
Yes, he was at he was on Sequest as well. Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Which was part of Amblin.
Yep. Okay. That's right. Yep.
All right. So there you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's so you saw all that stuff. You saw it on TV. I remember that specifically because everyone was like, "You need this $50,000, $100,000 SGI machine with this $50,000 Lightwave, or sorry, not Lightwave, Wavefront or Alias to get your stuff done." And it's like, no, you can do it on this Amiga. And Amigas were always like the rebel, the rebel unit,
the underdog. Yep. But they had a lot of fancy tricks for something like that. Yeah, amazing. I remember. I mean, my dad was always a he was a mainframe programmer.
Oh, really?
Fortran, Pascal, all that stuff. And sometimes, you know, he'd have to work, you know, weekends or whatever, or go into the office for a couple hours.
Sure.
And I remember going in with him when I was younger, and you know, he showed me what can be done on this machine. They were being loaned an SGI, and he showed me these demos, and some of them were just like, wow, it was real time, simple shaded,
right?
But it was real time, and there was one that hit me that was it was like this slowly moving spider on a floor, on a checkerboard floor, and wherever you move the mouse cursor, it would slowly turn around and keep walking towards it,
right?
And I'm like, that is awesome, that is just unbelievable. That's really, really cool.
Right.
I don't know what machine it was or any of that stuff, but that was my first personal experience with an SGI.
And they had they were kind of one of the people that sort of pioneered sort of the OpenGL stuff, right?
Like
they had something called a frame buffer.
Which is brilliant.
Right.
You know?
So that allowed the that's basically the beginning of graphics processors. So yeah, it was kind of important.
Yeah, yeah. Still using them today.
Yeah. I got a couple of them laying around in the office over here. in the podcast area at work, I actually have a ton of GPUs just sort of laying, not a ton, but a lot of GPUs laying around because I've been doing a lot of benchmarking and testing on them all. And so, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And gets warm, doesn't it?
They're out of the case right now, but they're.
Yeah.
And so some of these have like 3,800 procs in them. Or cores, sorry.
That's just.
That's insane.
That's ridiculous.
Yes. It's ridiculous.
That is a supercomputer.
Yeah,
it is. In an anti-static bag.
That's exactly what it is. It's a supercomputer in an anti-static bag. And that's why they use it for – they don't use it for just for graphics anymore. They use it for deep learning now, right? Yeah. So that's what it's about. So.
Yeah. See, like years ago, they didn't make anti-static bags that big to cover over the
computer. It is a big card. I will admit it is big. Mm. And the fact that one GPU requires 250 watts of power – and I want to stuff four of them into a computer. It's like, yeah, that's a lot.
Why are the lights dimming?
Exactly.
Oh man.
All right. So what was your first gig into the area? How did you get your first gig into the?
Well, I was actually doing my own. I had my own business as really the start of it all.
Really?
Yeah.
Back in Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So I was working with several places around the area. I just started hitting people up and seeing what was going on out there. And I heard about, you know, some people, there was a place, it was a place called Wave, and they were located in Framingham, I think, I want to say. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but there's some people there I contacted, and they used to work at Wave at the point that I was getting into it more. And they had contacts and just kind of spread from there. I worked with them on a couple of projects, and some of it was for Wave and some of it was for like other clients. And it's funny because when I look back at it, I wonder what was that guy's motivation. He was set. He had all this expensive equipment. He was doing some great stuff. Had some high end clients, and you know, And I was like, why does he want my help? Right. You know, but I ended up helping him out, and we did several projects after that. And it was funny because he asked me, so how much would you charge for this? And I said, here you go. I threw him a number, and he goes, no. And he takes the paper and he writes another number down. And he slides it across, and it was five times the amount I had given him. And he says, that's what you should be charging. Right. So I was like, wow, this is all eye opening.
Right.
So, but he also knew I was working with some other people that, were notoriously cheap. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to make sure, you know, mm-hmm. everything was corrected.
Right.
And I only knew this in hindsight,
mm-hmm.
but, he's a great guy. One of my mentors. So,
right.
Yeah. And he was an old SGI guy, Salvatore Ricciti.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wasn't there like kind of a fairly well-renowned visual effects studio somewhere in Western Massachusetts?
Yeah. Kaiser Waltak.
Kaiser Waltak, yes. Yeah.
And that was
Jeff Kaiser is like a big guy in the industry.
Is it Kleiser or Kaiser? I forget.
I think it's Kleiser.
Yeah, Kleiser, I think. Yeah, and then that spawned off several other companies, including Shadow Digital and Powder Keg. I worked at Powder Keg.
Uh-huh.
Great, great area, Western Mass. Great Barrington, actually, mm-hmm. was where it was. So you're in the Berkshire Mountains, and the office at Powder Keg was an old train station.
Really?
Yeah. It was just renovated into small office space.
Hmm.
But it was very charming and creaky floorboards and, you know, it's very old. And every day the train still would shuffle by like 5 miles an hour, just kind of rumble through.
Hmm.
And everything in the office would like bounce around a little bit, you know.
Wow.
But it was fantastic. It was awesome. I loved that place. You know, you just walk outside and you just look up and there's the mountains right in front of you.
Wow.
Yep. You know, train track right there, of course, but sure. You know, just
don't stand on the train track.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a fun place.
I think Doug Trumbull's got a studio out there too.
Yep, yep. That was another byproduct of actually was it, did Aardman?
I don't know about Aardman.
You know what it was? I worked with a guy at Powder Keg. He had his own office upstairs from Powder Keg, but he would collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked at with Nick Park. He was actually, what was this guy's name? Tim something. But anyway, he was one of John Lasseter's roommates back in college.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yep.
Interesting.
I can't remember his name. Anyway, Tim something.
Yeah.
But anyway, he did stop motion stuff. And he helped us out with a 3D movie ride. With, you know, a Christmas theme one, mm-hmm. with Santa and all that. So he did stop motion for, you know, Santa and some of the interior, you know, shots.
Mm-hmm.
And we did the CG versions of that for exterior and the reindeer flying and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun stuff.
So there's a lot of little pocket weird little places in Massachusetts. And you started one of the companies as well?
No, I just started my own thing. I had my own, when I was starting out, I was doing my own thing for a while.
Okay.
Yeah. And then it went from there. Eventually, that's where I started to work for.
Were you doing commercials? What were you doing?
It was some commercials, some local stuff. It wasn't any national stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it was doing a lot of motion graphics and things like that for corporations, including New Balance.
Okay.
and some medical renderings and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually I was like, all right, I need to do more than this. I had that stuff over what they're doing in Hollywood. That's more exciting to me.
Sure.
And I was like, all right. And I got in touch with a buddy of mine, Scott Wheeler,
mm-hmm.
and he was at Area 51.
Mm-hmm.
And they eventually had me over there.
Okay.
So, yeah, I ended up packing up.
That was over there in Burbank, right?
That was actually...
No, it's Santa Monica. I don't remember where their office was.
At the time, their office was in Eagle Rock, in Pasadena, right there. That's the only office I worked at at that time. And I was there for a couple of years. We worked on, you know, Dark Skies and X-Files and From the Earth to the Moon and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then Station X was starting up.
Okay.
Yeah. And was considering going. And
now, just so people know what Station X is, because it's kind of a thing. It was digital domain commercials was kind of a big deal and was growing quite a bit. And then I guess a handful of people from digital domain left to start their own company called Station X.
Yes. Yep. Including some X Area 51 people too were over at DD.
Yeah.
And then some people at Area 51, myself included, were, you know, being considered.
Right.
But
the head of Sway was one of those people too.
Oh, okay.
Mark Glazer, yeah.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah, but instead of going to Station X, I ended up going to Netter Digital. They actually, yeah, because they were offering a really good rate, so with staff position and everything, benefits. So I couldn't refuse that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, instead of working on the cool stuff Station X worked on, I was working on some kid shows.
Right.
So, yeah, there was a trade up of something there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, not all was lost. They did a lot of side projects there too. So, you know, it was good. It was a lot of fun there.
How
actually.
Long were you at Netter?
Netter? I was there for, let's see, 98 to 2000. Yeah. 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
Where were they located?
In North Hollywood.
In North Hollywood. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magnolia and Lancashire, I believe.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Right. Yeah, I think it's a Disney studio there now or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
No doubt next to some furniture store.
Yep. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So you were there for a couple of years. And where else did you, where'd you go from there?
From there, I was doing freelance for a while. And then, let's see, then Cantina Pictures was hiring.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? I'm going to get out of freelance for a while.
Okay.
And then I got to work with some of my old friends from Area 51 again
because
they went over to Cantina. And there I met, oh, man, this is going back. So I'm trying to figure out, let's see, what's his name again? Doug Beswick. He was an old schooler. He worked on Star Wars, Empire, and yeah, he was a stop motion animator. He animated helped animate the AT-ATs.
Yeah,
and he was also from what I recall, he was one of the flute playing aliens in the cantina.
Really?
In the original Star Wars, yeah.
Wow.
In the center.
Right.
That was him.
Okay.
And he had the mask to prove it.
Okay.
So he got to hang on to that prop, and that was on top of a filing cabinet in the office at Cantina Pictures.
Wow.
That was pretty cool.
That's why it's called Cantina Pictures.
Yeah, there exactly. You go. Yep.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Real nice guy.
Nice.
Had a lot of fun there, too. And that's where I'm trying to recall names now. Like, Well, anyway, it'll come back to me.
Okay.
Half the podcast is me remembering names.
So anyway, Cantina Pictures, and then how long were you there for?
Let's see. Probably about a year.
Okay.
I think so. Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Something like that. It feels like that's the right answer.
Back in NoHo.
I should look up in my LinkedIn account. I can tell you exactly.
All right. So Cantina Pictures, and then you ended up DD soon after that, or was there a couple other stops?
Let's see. Oh, I know what happened. 9/11 happened.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So I ended up moving back home because I wanted to be close to family and friends in case more shit happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started working at out in Great Barrington, you know, working with Powder Keg and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so I was picking up, you know, freelance gigs and working at Powder Keg and making sure Massachusetts was safe.
Sure.
Let's see. After that, I ended up, I ended up coming back and working at DD.
Okay.
Yeah. And my buddy Patrick Perez was there and he says, hey, you got to come back. You got to come back. We're hiring. We got so much shit we got to do. And, okay. And, I think he just missed me.
Okay.
No. So, you know, we were just like, you know what? That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
So, and so I worked there for a while and, that was on and off.
You were hired as a light wave guy. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Generalist. That was kind of the sought after, title for commercials, especially
for generalist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You just had to be able to switch gears.
Be nimble. Yeah.
Yeah. And I like doing that, to be honest. I really, to this day, I still prefer, jumping around from this to that.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. Look at the job postings out there and they're always for one particular task.
Not as much as they used to be though.
Not as much, but.
Like, things now are much more, generalist is not a bad word again anymore.
Yeah.
It used to be a bad word.
I know. And I don't understand why, but it was like,
I know.
Yeah. You know? So I was working as a generalist mm-hmm. at DD and able to, jump around, wear many hats, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I was back and forth between there and a couple startups. And, when the startup would fail, I'd go back to DD. Well, it was just, all these other people you work with over the years, they want to try to start their own thing,
Why do you think they failed?
Because they're artists, not businessmen.
Right.
It's just the same old. If you're an artist and you're successful at it, it means you have a lot of business. Just ends up being a lot of business. If you don't have a lot of business, how do you get a lot of business without knowing how to do it?
Mm-hmm.
You can make pretty pictures, but do you interface well with the people with money? There's that. So
I remember there was I was working at a company, which I won't mention, but they were basically they wanted to try to get some more investment. Right. Mm-hmm. So the owner was like, I'm going to get some more investment. I'm going to present all this stuff of what I want to do. And he went out to present it to some investors and they had some great technology they were developing and this other thing. And the guy says, well, great, but love to see your business plan. It's like, oh, okay. So he calls the office, can you guys send over a business plan, please? He didn't even have one. He doesn't even know what it means. It's not like a form, like a resume. It's like no concept of business at all. I was like, wait a minute. How did you even get this far?
Wait, what's a business plan?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, mm-hmm. It's we lose ourselves in what we do. So it's easy to, be blind to all the other things you really would need in order to make it successful,
We believe that we're going to do awesome work and all of our people are going to be great and everyone's going to take care of them mm-hmm. and that and people are just going to pay for it because I think it's awesome. And the truth is that's not going to be the case. Your work could be great too, but it's a competitive world.
Yeah, it sure is.
So, yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Again, it's like, well, there used to be 9 planets. Now there are 9D.
Is that same? Yep. Same story.
Yep.
Same story. All right. So bouncing around from DDD, et cetera. And then I guess you were there through the Nine Inch Nails project when you ended up taking the job over at Riot, right?
Yeah. Yep. So Riot was offering better pay and,
a staff position.
A staff position, benefits, et cetera.
And there was a whole bunch of Station X guys that went there.
Right? Yep. That's right. And round and round we go. And it's just, And that's where I actually met Andy Lesniak.
Right.
Yep. And actually, I saw Richard Wardlow. About 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's in Florida, right?
He's now up in the Bay Area working at Intel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he came down to Daiquiri to talk to us about the RealSense, the latest RealSense. Oh. And after he had his meeting with some of the people there, then we went out to lunch.
Nice.
Yeah. And he's doing really well.
Good.
He's such a great guy, that guy.
I work with him over at Sway.
Yeah.
And I guess over at Riot, too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's so bright.
Oh, man.
So bright.
Yeah. It's scary.
So
how could you be so bright and also a likable person?
one day, I don't know why I was at Sway, and I decided I was going to mess with him, which is a bad mistake. Big mistake. So I went in and I don't know, I was crumpling up some little piece of paper or whatever. And I took his mouse, it was an optical mouse, and just shoved it onto the optical sensor of the mouse so that his mouse wouldn't work. It was just little things like that. Mm-hmm. And I did it like two or three times. And then one day I came back to my computer and it was hosed. And he didn't even have to touch the keyboard. It was like hosed. Things were like my screen was melting constantly. And there was like things coming out of it. Like it was mess. Like when I would type, everything was messed up. Like all the letters on my keyboard were like reversed. Like everything was bad.
Yeah.
And he's a hacker. He can do whatever the hell he wants to do.
Oh, yeah. 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 Be careful.
Be careful. Not worth it. Not worth it. It's like, what the hell happened to my computer?
It's so funny. He has a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. He's a very, very bright guy. Right.
Yeah.
It's cool he's working at Intel.
Yeah, it is.
I'll have to figure out what he's doing. All right. So Andy was there. Andy Lesniak was there. Andy Lesniak is another ridiculously bright guy.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, it was, unfortunately.
He was, yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite humans. He was awesome.
He was in one of the first projects I remember Andy and Richard were doing. So Andy Lesniak and Richard Wardlow, the RED cameras had just come out?
Yes, yep. Yeah, they were developing. They were the first certified third-party RED developer.
Right.
Yep.
And so they made a camera mount for RED cameras that would take on Canon lenses.
Yes, that's right.
So and that you could use a Canon lens instead of the expensive.
Yeah, and it was amazing because, you know, we were there witnessing this whole time. Yeah, every single day they'd come in and say, this is what we did and this is how we did it.
Right.
And it was just like.
They were building, it was hardware and software, I think.
Yeah.
And no, it was mostly hardware.
It was both, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they taught themselves everything they needed to learn, to know how to do that.
Right.
And there was a whole bunch of stuff they didn't know yet.
Right.
And they were just like, well, what's the next step?
Right.
And they just asked themselves the right questions and they ended up pushing forward, perseverance, and it paid off.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Andy's house was, you've been to his house, right? It's
what? It's a mad scientist / hoarder's house.
Yeah. I walk into a room and it's like, I've got 45 Pico projectors. What are you going to, I don't know what I'm going to do with them yet.
Yeah. I got some ideas.
Yeah. Okay. All right. No, that's where the laser cutter is going. What?
Yeah.
All right. Oh, I'm building a motion control time-lapse camera system here.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't drink that. That's not water.
It was usually vodka. But
right. Or some sort of chemical.
Yeah, some solvent.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's where I anodize my parts. Is that code for something? Never mind.
Yeah, no, it was just stuff everywhere. Oh. Everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like, where's the couch? Yeah.
Yeah. I think there was a story. I think when he was at Scanline, and I guess they had to go on. It was like a last minute thing, and they had to go on set, and they had to create a camera tracking system. Mm. Like, out of nothing.
Oh, geez. MacGyver.
Yeah. And they're like, Andy, make us a camera tracking system. Like, and not just like, you know, literally like you can track the camera, like, you know, what you can do on a Vive or whatever. He's like, what time is it? It's like, you know, 8 o'clock at night. He says, it's got to be ready for the morning.
Wow.
And so he's like, all right. So he goes to Best Buy and just like finds stuff and then just starts building things in his garage. And like, this should work, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Richard had told us when we were having lunch, he reminded me that Andy had built his first hologram in fifth grade.
Wow.
Yeah. He was just like, you know what? I want to do that.
Right.
And, you know, I think a lot of us relate to that wish to do something difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, we were like, oh yeah, that'd be nice to know how to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be great. The difference between us and Andy is Andy just says, fuck it, I'm doing it.
Right.
I'm going to keep doing it until I figure it out and it's done. Mm-hmm. And he was such a bullheaded perseverer. It was amazing.
Yeah. And I think we just, it's been just over a year that he passed away, unfortunately.
Yep. January 16th, I think. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very sad. It just, yeah.
It still feels like a dream. It's
I know.
Still crazy.
Yeah, it was very sudden and out of nowhere, and I just was in a shock when I heard about it.
Yeah.
I think I remember I had just recorded a podcast with Brandon Davis.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to put it out, and then I found out that he died. So I was really, really upset about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so, yeah. But he was a great guy and very mm-hmm. funny, and we used to get along very well.
Yep.
He partied a lot.
Oh, yes, probably, he did.
Probably his downfall.
Yeah.
But he was entertaining. I wanted to do, I never came out, but I went this experiment. I wanted to do this time lapse or a video that was all based on time lapse and stuff. And I had this idea of having cocktails and time lapse.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So we had these glasses and we were arranging glasses. And basically, it was just an excuse for us to drink, right? And so he had his, like, I've got this motion control time lapse camera system that he had built like that weekend or something, right? So it had this arms and the arm would move across very slowly. You know, you time it or whatever. And he would go, it's a click, 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 click. And so it's like, yeah. And so basically, we just make these quote unquote fancy cocktails and then we'll slowly drink them. And then I'd like, you know, I'd slowly like get drunk while we were making this time lapse. I want to see the ice melting. He's like, hold on a second. It's like, and he goes back to the garage and brings out this big old heat gun so the ice would melt faster.
That's great.
Yeah, he's crazy.
Oh man. Yeah. You know, sometimes though, the way he drank, you need to do slow motion, not time lapse.
Yeah, I know.
Man.
Yeah.
I remember.
Go ahead.
I remember one time he was shooting an element for a project he was working at Scanline. Mm-hmm. And he was using dry ice to get a smoke element.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to remember exactly how he had it set up, but he needed my assistance because he was shooting it on a velvet piece of duvetyne, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It was under his bathroom door. He needed it to creep out,
mm-hmm.
but he needed some sort of an air pressure.
Uh-huh.
And so what we did was I took a big giant fan mm-hmm. and aimed it up at the crack opening of the door
uh-huh.
just to add some pressure.
Uh-huh.
It was just enough to push this element or the wispiness right. under the door uh-huh. where he shot it. And it was just like, okay, we're using your bathroom.
Right.
where we're shooting your elements. It's amazing. Like he didn't care what it was. It was just like, is this going to work? Yes. No. Okay.
Yeah.
So
it's, you know, yeah. sometimes you got to go low tech.
Yeah.
Oh, and
yeah.
it's cool.
It is amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They used to do stuff like that all the time. I remember it was, friend of mine, Eric Shealy, he worked on the title sequence to Cabin Fever. Do you remember Cabin Fever?
Mm, yeah, I never saw it, but yeah.
And they asked, and he was like, it was a very low budget. It became a big movie, but when it was made, it was super low budget, and they hired him to do something, and he did it by himself in his kitchen.
Oh, wow.
And all he did was, it was basically kind of time lapse in a sense, but it was a piece of beautiful cloth. Mm. And then he would take a picture and then picture and picture, picture. And then he would slowly, it was animated, right?
Yeah.
He'd drop little pieces of blood on it.
Yes.
And then it would get more and more disgusting as the blood would go. And then that was the title sequence.
That's pretty cool.
But it was literally him in his kitchen with a, you know, down shooter on a, and a, and a,
5D and just doing it that way, and then like animating and going After Effects till it fades and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, I mean, that's stuff I, you know, me and my coworkers would do.
Right.
Even at DD, we would just do like, oh, I need this texture, but I need it to be a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a stain that would go in this shape.
Right.
And we were just like, all right, we'll grab a piece of paper and throw some paint on it, and a little water, let it dry, scan that in, and use that as your texture.
Right.
You know, just little things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think people forget to do that.
I think people
will rather spend 2 hours on Google Images to look for something rather than just do what they can do.
Yeah, that's true. And especially if you need it to be a certain shape, you know.
Right.
Because, I mean, yeah, you can go on Google Images and, there, I mean, nowadays there's a lot out there and you can pretty much find almost everything you need in general and then manipulate those pieces and into what you want. But by the time you do that, you could have done it already by the
simpler means.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that reminds me, Andy, he would shoot elements in the atrium when it was at Riot.
Yeah.
He would throw down, or was it Method at the time that he did this?
Oh, wait, hold on. I think I know this story. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. We put a drop cloth at the bottom where the pool table was.
Yes.
And from the balcony, you know, from the top floor, dropping paint all over it and shot it.
Oh.
Do you remember this?
Kind of,
Yeah. So it's like same thing on a much bigger scale.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Janelle did some stuff with him too, some other crazy element shoot that they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. We had done a lot of shots or shooting in the garage down, you know, the subterranean garage.
Oh, right.
Yeah, we'd done a lot of things down there too, like wet dripping elements on windshields and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, but getting it so the light was right. You know, and he had all his lighting and everything. He had. Yeah. You know, everything he needed was.
He was a MacGyver in a lot.
He was. Yeah. Oh. He was just like I said, ask the right questions.
Yeah.
Figure it out. That's it. Got to do this. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us, me included, it's what holds me back at times is, well, is that the right way to do it? Or who gives a shit? Just do it and see what happens.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Yeah, you're right.
You know?
Yeah, it's really good. I think it's a good thing. And I think back then we were just being kind of a little bit more innovative. I think a lot of that innovation or a lot of the idea of just figuring things out has kind of gone away a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't think people do it as much as they used to. I think they'd like just go on the internet and search for a solution as opposed to just thinking for themselves.
Right, yeah. And thinking for themselves, I mean, it kind of lends itself to generalist kind of behavior.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And as I remember back at Netter, as a matter of fact, one of the people I worked with, she was moving on to a bigger studio.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, she thought it was wonderful that all I have to do is this. And if I need this, I just send it down to this department. If I need that, I just get it from those guys over there. And then I take what they did and I'll just do this. And that's all I have to work on. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, neat. At the time I was like, oh, that's fancy.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm like, well, I kind of like doing those things, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want somebody else doing all of that. That's fun. Takes away the fun. But
so you had left Method just about the same time I did, like not long after that. Did you go to DD right from there?
I left Method to go to another startup. And that was a place called Rogue State. Okay. Again, with the same people from Area 51.
Okay.
Just, you know.
You guys burned a lot of places down, didn't you?
Yep.
But then, did you come back for Tron?
Yes.
Okay, so you and I were on Tron again together.
Yes, as a matter of fact, that's one of the interesting things is that you, me, and Daniel were sitting near each other in the same triangular configuration as we were at Method. And we were like, hey, look at this. It's the same thing.
Same guys, yeah.
Same thing. He's over there, you're there, and I'm here.
Yeah.
And then it almost happened again on Oblivion.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you worked on, we did a Halo spot together too.
Yep. Yeah. So that was a bunch good of... one. Wow. I don't think I, you know, I'm trying to freshen up the reel just to do it.
Right.
And I think Halo is not even in my material. I have to get that.
Look that up.
Yeah.
We've done a bunch of work on that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. It was you, me, Kami, Juan.
Dan Thrawn. Yep.
And there was the one other guy who was a modeler.
Oh, yeah.
What's his name? Asian guy. Big Asian guy.
Yes. Yep. Man, what's his name?
Yeah.
Super nice guy. Super really nice. Very talented.
Yep.
Man. Oh. Yeah, he was like a
really big guy.
Yeah, he was a tall and buff Asian dude.
He was like an Asian version of The Rock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, pretty much. It's like that. You don't see that often.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he was super nice. But yeah, anyway, I remember that was saying, did you work on any of the like 47 Ronins or?
No.
No, you didn't do that one.
No.
You do Maleficent at all?
No.
No, okay.
I almost did. As a matter of fact, it was one of those things where it was a situation that was unfortunate. Mm-hmm.
You were on X-Men.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm wearing your X-Men shirt. Yeah, yeah. The unfortunate business was commercials that asked me to come over there to help them out on the spot and wanted to hold. Mm-hmm. So I committed to them. And then Parker came over and asked me, hey, do you want to work on Maleficent? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna need some help on this. And I was like, I would have said yes, but I already committed to these guys.
Mm.
And then a week goes by. I didn't hear anything, kept asking. And then finally got an answer and they said, well, actually, we're not going to need you after all because the team's going to be much smaller. I was like, oh.
Okay.
So then I was like, Parker, do you still need somebody? Oh, man, we just hired a guy. And I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me.
Right.
There
you go.
It happens.
But you end up, okay, so you end up working for doing some, you started getting to different work at some point. You started working at doing some VR and AR work, and you started really sort of changing the scope of stuff that you do.
Well, you know, it's kind of fortunate. And
you've been doing that for the last 3 years.
Yeah. I was at Daiquiri for almost 3 years now. Mm-hmm. And before that, I was actually tinkering on my own with game engines.
Right.
And
I remember you were doing some Unity stuff back on Tron, I think.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. 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 I was making a disc golf game, which was actually working. And you remember how it worked? It was actually working pretty good.
Swipe your disc golf, and it was for on the iPhone, right?
Yeah. Yep. That was an
early. You and Matias were working on stuff together, right?
Yep. Matias was doing stuff. Patrick Perez was doing stuff. Right. The three of us were, you know, nerding out on that stuff. And again, another thing we're nerding out with. And and it took me back to the programming days again. It was like, it felt really good. And it's funny, too, because, you know, we'd all get together and brainstorm, you know, and we'd have our own ideas we wanted to do personally, but then we'd have shared ideas we wanted to do together. And it just, it was an explosion. And, you know, we learned so much, even if we didn't finish a project or get anything on the App Store, that wasn't even it. Again, it's the journey. Mm-hmm. And we learned so much that it became a big value, you know, for companies like Daiquiri.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, all three of us ended up over at Daiquiri.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick going first, he wanted to get out of VFX and go into, augmented reality.
Mm-hmm.
So he was kind of like the pioneer for us.
Right.
And, you know, we were all, it was during that business with, you know, visual effects, just everybody's pissed off and, you know, treated unfairly, you know, a lot of exodus of work and all that stuff. So we had to think of something else to do, but something that also fulfilled our spirit in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just remember I got, you know, rolled up the sleeves and started with, a wingsuit game.
Okay.
Yeah. And I nerded out heavily with that one. I actually got to the point where I think I told you the story, but, I got to the point where I went on NASA's website and learned how airfoils work and the math behind it a little bit, and mm-hmm. and trying to cram all that idea into the game engine. Mm-hmm. And I ended up making my own flight engine, where now I had these prefabs with the code attached to them. Mm-hmm. And literally you just drop it in the engine and it does what you would expect it to do, as if it was in real life. And if I attached several of these components together, mm-hmm. now I had a rudder, some ailerons, and a body, mm-hmm. and all of that had its own properties, which combined together actually made it sail without any propulsion, just dropped and did it just like a paper airplane would off of a building or something, just kind of did this kind of motion.
Right.
And so I was like, wow, there was a eureka moment there for me. Mm-hmm. And I started applying all this into a wingsuit game. And the more I got into it, the more I'm realizing, man, it's difficult, especially being a new dad and all that stuff. And, is there another idea I have that's easier? Well, yes. Mm-hmm. Which one is that? Disc golf. Okay. And could I actually finish that sooner, you know?
Sure.
So after asking a few questions like that, I was like, you know what? I'm going to start disc golf. I'm going to scrap this, but take what I've learned from this thing, mm-hmm. including the flight engine, apply it to a disc now, mm-hmm. and tweak it a little bit. And now I have a Frisbee flying and doing what it does. I mean, in real life. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that I made the game so that you can tilt the Frisbee mm-hmm. before you fly it. So if you tilted a Frisbee in real life and you threw it, mm-hmm. it would actually arc right. around a turn. And I built the game engine so that it would do just that.
Right.
And it was a lot of fun. I mean, I even made it so if you were a certain distance away from the basket mm-hmm. and you threw it, it passed a certain distance mm-hmm. and it started going towards it. Mm-hmm. If it was a long shot, mm-hmm. it would actually get to a point where it's close proximity to the basket. It would actually slow down. So it was like in slow motion getting towards the basket because it was a cool shot, you know? Right. And it was just a lot of fun to do.
Yeah.
And all that stuff was working. I just needed to keep going. It's just, but you know, time happens, life right. happens, then second kid happens.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, again, I just applied all that stuff that I learned doing those things to what I was doing at Daiquiri and mm-hmm. and just kept leveling up and, mm-hmm. and you know, also use the Unreal Engine. And that's man, what a beast that thing is.
Right.
It's powerful. They both are in their own right. I mean, mm-hmm. they both trade pros and cons, obviously, and you know, just like anything else, really.
Sure.
But I like them both just as much, but for different reasons.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Well, that's really cool. Do you think you're gonna stick to some of these new experimental things like the VR and AR thing? I think it'd be great.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I've been tinkering with VR and AR even on the side.
Right.
For quite some time.
Do you have a Vive at your house?
I have an Oculus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have two Oculi.
Oculi. Is it Oculi?
Yeah,
it's Oculi.
I would say.
Because Oculus is already for two eyes, right?
Oculuses.
Oculuses.
Yeah. Right. It's a lot of fun. I think AR probably has a better chance
For practical reasons.
For practical reasons.
But VR does too. I think
it
that
does.
People are looking to VR as in impractical ways. And I've said this a million times. Some of our users are probably sick and tired of it, hearing it. But everyone keeps trying to shove filmmaking and games into VR when it's not necessarily the only thing that's going to be good for.
Yeah.
In fact, very little of it's going to be. I think it'll be good for practical things
like, yeah.
you know, virtual surgery and architecture visualization and other things like that.
So, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
AR too, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of simulation stuff for whatever – you know, in whatever sector you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest concerns with VR is the fact that a lot of people get nauseous instantly or very soon after using it. Mm-hmm. And what they don't understand immediately is that that's something that can go away quickly. If you just you just take it off, mm-hmm. give yourself a few minutes, try it again.
Right.
Once you start to feel a hint of that, take it off and try it again later.
Right.
You'll find that your duration in the experience can last longer and longer every time until all of a sudden you're used to it.
Also, the other thing they can do is basically just give you better degrees of freedom, right? More feedback, right? So 6 degrees of freedom is going to be better than 3 degrees of freedom.
Yeah, that and, well, fuck it, just take Dramamine.
Yeah, I know. But it is kind of, I think people are learning it, and that's fine. They're going to have to learn the dialogue of what it takes. But
yeah, but I think, that said, Sony obviously is probably going to make the biggest splash for VR because they have the exposure.
Have they sold that many headsets?
Not yet, right. I don't think. But I know several people that have them. They say for what this is and working on a PS4, it's awesome.
Right.
So that's pretty promising.
Right.
It's definitely the lowest point of entry for VR. And it just works.
Cardboard's the lowest point of entry.
Actually, you're right. Yeah. Well, wait a minute. What device are we using in the cardboard?
Doesn't matter. The device that's in your pocket.
I know. But okay. All right.
That's the
point. I don't have to buy it again. You don't have to buy it again. You're right.
Right?
Yep.
That's the point. It's $5 for a piece of cardboard or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh.
So. Well, this is cool, Dave. Yeah. We're just over an hour. This is perfect. I think we've had some interesting chats. We'll have to do it again.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll get Daniel Buck here again.
Oh, man. That'd be great.
Another triad.
I miss that fucker.
Yeah. He's a good guy.
He is.
And so we'll chat. And so, yeah, definitely keep us posted as to where you end up landing.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it'll be cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Yep.